So yesterday, the University of Minnesota's Natural Resource Research Institute hosted an open house for the media at its research lab in Coleraine. Purpose of the event was to showcase a new biofuels project that is the result of 10 years of research into producing renewable fuels from wood chips and other plants. Scott Hall, our senior correspondent, was there, and he's here to tell us more about the project. We've been using wood for fuel for thousands of years, Scott. What's different about this?
This process converts wood chips, and wood chips are used. I think Itasca Community College has a wood chip burner for some of its fuel. So we've been using wood chips for a long time, like 20, 30 years. But these take wood chips one step further. They create a high-energy solid fuel from them. And the energy content of the final product is comparable to coal, and that means it could have applications on large commercial and industrial scales. And also, it burns a lot cleaner than coal, including lower carbon emissions. A final product looks like a small charcoal briquette you might use in an outdoor grill.
So is it literally black, or is it?
Yeah,
like,
it's black, and it's a briquette, and it's they're kind of attached, but yeah, it's pretty cool, and it's very lightweight, and it's they roast the wood chips like coffee beans, which removes moisture, and then the roasting process is more sophisticated, maybe, but they get a lot of other impurities out of the wood. And they get a briquette that's about 2.5 times. 2.5 times. This is amazing. The energy of wood. I think they said a pound of wood chips might have 4,500 BTUs, and a pound of these briquettes has like 11,000 BTUs.
So they last longer? Does that mean they last longer?
No, they burn hot. They burn hot like coal. And
how is it better than coal? Would you say?
Well, that's a good question. It burns a lot cleaner, number one. It has much less sulfur. Coal has a lot of sulfur and heavy metal emissions. You know, we've been worried about mercury from coal plants always. Even as, like, Clay Boswell out in Cohasset, that's one of the cleaner burning plants, but it still emits mercury particulates that could get in our water and get in our food chain, get in the critters and things like that. So there's hardly any mercury emissions and other heavy metals. Sulfur, of course, contributes to things like acid rain. And like natural gas, carbon dioxide emissions are much lower than coal. There's still some, but it's about, I think, a third the amount of coal. So there's a higher improvement in carbon release. And it's also, I think this is a big deal, of course, it's a way to diversify our local forest products economy. Our energy sources, our forests, they're local, and we need good forest management always. But with good forest management, those resources are renewable. And this I didn't know. European countries already import from the United States millions of tons of the more conventional wood pellets. Many of them are made in the South from pine. So this biofuel briquette is a much higher energy and higher value product.
So it took like 10 years to develop this.
Yeah.
And what are some of the challenges? One of my questions to you is going to be, how do they get rid of those? Do you know how they get rid of all those impurities? Where does it go?
Okay, this roaster, the impurities are roasted out. The gases, the science is a little over my head, but the gases and impurities are collected and recycled and used for fuel to fuel the process.
The impurities are?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So they, they're excited about this. Of course, the big challenge is how do you make it commercially, how do you make it work economically?
Yeah.
And places like Minnesota Power and Xcel are real interested in this, but it's still in its infancy. And that's still the big challenge, is how do you get it up to scale to produce? And then,
so we're talking big scale use for this right now.
Good
not
question.
In homes.
Yeah, can you do it in your barrel stove? Not your barrel stove, but a good wood heater in your house.
Would
you?
I asked one of the engineers that, and he said, "Yeah, yeah, you probably could." He said, "But you'd really want to. They burn so hot. You want to be sure you have good
plenty of it."
You know what refractories are? I've never been able to talk about refractories on the radio. My dad sold refractories for 40 years.
Wow. Huh?
Every place you have a furnace, you need refractories. Refractories are high temperature insulation made from clay that protect furnaces and combustion chambers from heat. So
they don't overheat?
Yeah.
Almost?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the heat can wreck the furnace. Mm-hmm. And these things burn very hot, like coal. And you probably wouldn't burn, you think you won't burn coal in your wood furnace because of the soot that would come out your chimney. But I suppose you could get the coal could get too hot if you're able to heat it up enough. So they need to create a product that has commercial industrial use. And that has to do with having a briquette that is totally reliable, dependable, unique, uniform, and that the users can count on to be there when they order it by the ton. And of course, finding that new use for wood and other plant material. So it would be a boost to our economy.
So I'm a little bit confused. It's not meant for resididential consumption, but who?
John,
give me a name of a couple businesses that could use it. I mean, are we talking like large industries that would use it, or big square footage facilities? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think like Hibbing in Virginia come to mind to me. They already produce their own electricity. They have electrical plants in the city that are owned by the city, and I think they've been burning wood chips as part of their fuel source for a number of years now. So they might be a good place for these chips to end up, for these briquettes. They'd probably be interested in it. And that was my big question, because after the presentation and after we looked at all the technical stuff and watched the briquettes come out, it starts as a fine black powder, looks just like coal, and it's converted to a briquette. After we watched that, I grabbed an engineer and I said, can I do this in my home? He said, yeah, but it's really going to burn hot. Yeah. He said, and the thing that he's excited about is it could be used on a small scale. Say a rural town could conceivably have and this is down the road a ways, an electric generating plant that burns this, and it could provide enough electricity for like 100 homes.
I see.
Or things like that. It could be on a smaller scale, and I think that's exciting or appealing to me for rural Minnesota, and also for getting everybody off the grid, off this huge grid that could be taken down by a hurricane or by a hacker. It might be able to have smaller power plants that burn cleaner. So that's...
Do they have a name for this, for that briquette? Or is it just a...
Yeah, it's just called a... They started to call it bio-coal, and then they kind of realized that that's not a good name because people will confuse it with coal. So it's just called a biofuel. I would say a biofuel briquette from wood. A wood biofuel.
Was there any opposition or negatives about it?
Well, they've been pursuing this for so long. And the NRRI, people don't know, Natural Resource Research Institute, is a division of the University of Minnesota. When you go to Duluth and you come in from Highway 94, come in on the central, it's on the left there near the airport. It's right there on the highway going in. But they have this research lab in Coleraine, which used to be owned by U.S. Steel. And it's got a great history. I mean, I think they developed taconite there back in the 50s. They did a lot of research like that. I think magnetation for the enhanced pellet that magnetation developed. I think a lot of the work was done at this research center. So it's kind of the economic, natural resources economic arm of the University of Minnesota up here doing research on things like that.
And it's still their timeline for when they hope people will
use
it?
I don't know. And I think this is called a pre-industrial project, which means they've got the room. A room is half, a huge warehouse is half full of this equipment. But they can produce 4 to 6 tons a day of biofuel per day. And that sounds like a lot. But last I heard, Minnesota Power burns about 90 coal cars a day of coal to produce electricity. A lot of that electricity goes to the mines. But, that's millions of tons every
week.
So
is this thing, this time frame is, why is it going to take so long? Is it mastered now? Are they happy with the
product? Yeah, I think that's why they had the open. I think that's why they had the open house.
It's a final product.
Because they feel like, we got something here.
Okay.
And the other reason I think that's true is the partners in this, including Minnesota Power, XL, synthetic gas company. There's a lot of partners in this who are following this really closely, so they think there's a lot of potential. And another interesting thing is now that this is built and it's up and running, they're going to build another processor that's going to turn agriculture byproducts, corn, you know, silage, corn stalks. They could even do, if they could find a way to harvest invasive plants. They're selling it as a use for
buckthorn.
Buckthorn and things like that. Anyway, they turn the plant material into a synthetic gas and liquid fuels and chemicals. And this reminded me of something we were talking about many years ago in the 90s, I think, about Heidi, you and I have kind of followed the magazine industry. Have you recently? The magazine industry is contracting, and the paper suppliers like Blandin, Sappi over in Cloquet, you know, their big customers are a lot of these magazines and advertising things, and market is shrinking. And if you've been listening to Don Bosey's History of Blandin Paper, you know that it's just one up and down after another they're trying to cope with the markets. It's extremely competitive, the paper markets. And it seems to me that maybe Sappi and Blandin, a long way down the road, will be interested in maybe having a paper mill that might also produce chemicals from wood, because they're already pulverizing wood and consuming a lot of wood. This is my speculation now. But it was brought up years ago, and I think if you read the Blandin underwriting card now, Blandin paper underwriting card, they kind of mention looking for innovative ways to use technology.
Do you see the magazine industry never coming back? Not never.
You guys,
that's a bad term, but do you see it always declining?
Consumers are... You know, I read a lot of magazines, but there's a huge change now in the magazine industry, starting at the high end. Some of the, like Vogue, and some of the, what are the...
Cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
InStyle.
Style magazines and things like that. They're beginning to produce less.
Well, I think the last 10 years have been a huge decline, but I think there's some, the ones that kind of weathered the storm, I think there's a little bit of a resurgence in magazines.
Oh, really? Kind of like vinyl albums?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
I do. Maybe that's just because I recently just subscribed to two magazines. So that's my personal.
Well, it's funny. I talk to Don Bosey almost every week when we're producing this paper series on the history of Blandin paper. And we talk about these contemporary issues right now, because it mirrors so closely what Blandin was going through in 1916, 1927, 1930s. I mean, it's just this constant pressure to figure out what the market is and to produce a product that works in the market. And so I couldn't help but think, I wonder if this use of trees and plant materials to make chemicals might be, and fuels, might end up being something our paper industry begins to look at seriously.
That's our senior correspondent, Scott Hall. He was at the University of Minnesota's Natural Resources Research Lab in Coleraine yesterday to see how high-energy briquettes are made from northern Minnesota forests. Thanks, Scott.
Yep.